Hello and welcome to Through the Mist with me, your host Owen. This is a Void and Verse Theory podcast. We look at the law and try to understand how it all works. In this episode, we'll be looking at
Cyclops and Centaurs.
Hey, we're back, episode 20. Let's go! And it's not just me. We have got a very, very special friend with us. Say hello to everybody. Say hello to the Mistbusters.
Hello, Mr. Busters. It is me, the other Brit, the rare few. I think there's only like maybe two or three of us, so it is very much just like, hey, I'm one of them. Don't forget there are other ones of us.
Hello, Fran, because you haven't said your name yet.
Oh, have I not? Oh my God. Hi, I'm Fran. I'm Fran from the Best Time Camp.
There we go. That's what we needed.
Oh, God.
Yes. So before we get into the episode, we'll talk about a little few things. First things first is the relatively recent, come on, guys, I do a monthly podcast, it's recent, recent news about the show. Yay, it's greenlit. Everyone excited?
Yes. Oh, my God. Officially greenlit. Finally, it's happened. We're here. We're ready. I'm excited beyond all belief. I cannot believe it's happening. They've also said that production for filming is most likely going to start in this, like, the summer as well. So we'll probably got casting in, like, April, I guess, if they're going to start filming in the summer.
Very exciting. Very exciting. We're going to see our favourite books on the little screen, because it's not a film. To be honest, I think little screen's a good thing for this.
Yes. We've been burnt before. Is TV still called is TV also called the silver screen, or is that just, like, film, the silver screen?
I don't know. Anywho. No.
Yeah, sorry.
Talking about, it's out of order, but you know, whatever. Other podcasters, Morgan, who, a friend of the show, he's put some ideas forward and they're in my episode idea list for episodes, so they will happen. They started their own podcast, Capture the Flag podcast, about power sets of people in the Voidinverse. So if you, because I'm presuming you like that sort of thing, because you're listening to this, which is all about lore, but that's all about, like, power sets. So if you're interested, I'm sending you their way, because, you know, it's, why not? The last thing I want to talk about, and then we'll see if Fran wants to say anything, because I feel like there might be something she wants to mention, is that I really just want to reiterate my Pegasi theory. And if you don't know why I'm doing this now, one, it's very actually tied to the episode. And two, because this is the last episode I've recorded since the Seaweed Brain collaboration I was last on, which is Pegasi are half-blood offspring of the Pegasus. But are they? Because the stupid one dusting line from Scorpio. I don't know. I like the theory, but now I'm conflicted inside. Let us know your thoughts, please. Thank you. Fran, anything you want to shout out?
Well, Owen, I think I have a few things to shout. So, obviously, my own podcast, The Best Damn Camp, I'm going through timeline order for the Ryanverse, which, you know, is original enough, I think. And I often talk about the topics no one wants to talk about, which is probably why most people don't like me.
Oh, no, people like you. People just disagree with you.
I'm not afraid to talk about these sort of things, but for the other big news, my first short story is coming out February 23rd. It is a story which is a setup for my novel series. Yeah, this month. Oh my god. And it is this setup story for this huge series that I'm working on called the Into the Wild series. It is a young adult adventure series. There are gonna be three novels, four short stories, and it's gonna be across, like, the next couple of years. So if you want to see what it's going to be about, the first short story, Echoes of the Past, is currently available for pre-order and will be out on February 23rd. Kindle users, very sorry, Amazon's a dick and they're not letting my thing basically be it for pre-orders on Amazon, so you won't be able to get it until the day it comes out if you have a Kindle. But everyone else, you know, you kind of got an advantage, so you can pre-order it on basically everything else but Amazon. But I'm really excited. It's been a huge, incredible journey just kind of getting this done. Book one is coming out this summer on August 20th. Pre-orders aren't available yet, but they will be very soon. And it's, yeah, it's just, it's been amazing. Also, can I do a shout out possibly? She doesn't know I'm doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Eriko Ito from Seaweed Brain has been doing some audiobook sort of stuff for Echoes of the Past. So if you like Seaweed Brain, you're going to hear her voice for my story as well. So,
hey, so you know, we're all that was family. It feels wrong to say family, but family.
The found family. We're a found family. Oh my god, we're the found family trope. I love it.
Anyway, love it. Yes. So make sure I will. I don't know if you send.
I will.
There'll
send,
be a link. There'll yeah, be a link be in the description. for a place to pre-order the book, or you know, we'll work it out. I'll get one. It'll be down there. So yes, do that. Right then, we'll get into the episode proper now. Woo! Okay, so the episode proper. Let's do this. Right then. So this is technically a follow-up episode from episode 11, Bring on the Monsters. Another great episode title, if I do say it myself. If you don't know the pun in this episode title, I'm very disappointed. Yes, so in that, we were all looking about monsters and, like, the biology and, like, the fact that, like, basically it was me going, they should have exponentially grown and they haven't. Why is that? To summarise, so they're all born as per standard animal procedure. They fight, then they do their thing, fight heroes, dust the Tartarus, whatever they do. We'll talk about that later. Lifespan isn't infinite as you're linked to mortal belief, so you fade over time. So an individual monster fades over time, but the race, so there's like a limited number of monsters there ever can be at one point. Their final fading, it acts like their final death, and then they replace one by new ones being born. Some individuals will have longer lifespans, like Polyphemus, because they are more prominent within the minds of mortals. And just to reiterate, when I say monster, I am talking about anything that poofs into gold dust. I don't care if they're good, I don't care if they're bad, they poof into gold dust. That is the, if you had the animal kingdom tree, a monster would be the species of, and the thing that links them all is they poof to gold dust. That is what a monster is. So we're all clear. This episode, we are going to focus in on Cyclops and Centaurs, like I think I mentioned in that episode, and look at monster lifestyles and that bit that they do between being born and their final death. Right then. Shall start with Cyclopses, the one-eyed creatures. And as per usual, we look at the history of things, and then we look at how we put them in the Roidenverse, and then later we'll talk about lifestyle stuff, which is why we've got Fanon, just to be clear. That's why I invited her.
Yes, there was no bribing involved. It was all Owen's decision. There was no exchanging of money, nothing like that. It's all
no exchanging of. I definitely won't be appearing on Fans Podcast anytime soon. Nope.
No. It was all completely for just Through the Mist's benefit.
Yes, always is. yes. So in the real world, and I just wanted to talk about this. Really, I don't think I really have this bit for Cyclopses. But in the real world, in IRL life. In non-mythology history, there's this theory that the idea of cyclopses came from fossils of dwarf elephants that used to wander over the Mediterranean when it was dried out and just salt plains, and then ended up in Greece and southern Europe, Mediterranean Europe. And like this idea comes from, if you have a look at picture, you will see that because of their trunk and on a skull, your trunk, it's just cartilage, there's no bone there, so it just looks like a big hole on these dwarf elephant skulls. Mm. And if you rearrange the skeleton wrong, you can make it bipedal, and it looks like it has one massive hole in the middle of its skull, which is perfectly placed for an eye. And Quinn from Floor 600, which is dead.
Sorry, Quinn!
she taught us that one, so yay.
Uh-huh.
fun learning history. However, the fun part in mythology. Yes, so there are two different major different Cyclops groups in mythology. One comes from Homer and one comes from, how do you say the other guy's name?
Hestoid? Oh God, you're asking, you're asking a dyslexic mate. I would have said Hestoid.
Meh, the other guy. he's the guy that did the origin myth. So, you know, that guy. So his Cyclopses are the three elder Cyclopses born of Gaia and Uranus. The ones that are thrown into Tartarus, that forged Zeus's light bolt, became loyal to the Olympians, even though, as per usual, the Olympians killed them. Woohoo. Apollo killed one of them.
Yeah, and Poseidon killed another as well, I think, didn't he? Wasn't Poseidon the one he killed?
To be honest, I read it and went, it's not important for the episode. So I didn't take note.
That's fair.
I just remember the Apollo one.
Yeah, I think I only remember that one just because I think Apollo mentions it in Trials of Apollo. But because that's why his dad was mad at him or something at one point in time.
He killed the Cyclopses because Zeus's lightning bolt killed one of his lovers.
Oh, yeah, that was it. That makes
can't
sense.
Take it out on big, you can't take it out on dad, so he takes it out on the Cyclopses.
Exactly. You know what? Fair enough. I get him. I understand.
Then you have the Homer Cyclopses, and these ones are much more like Polyphemus. So they live in caves, eat people, they're shepherds and not blacksmiths, and they weren't necessarily loyal to the Olympians. Later on, so they're like the two original Cyclopses, and later on, like in Roman mythology, they seem to like start to merge and mix and become different combinations of the two. And this is kind of where we end up in the Roydenverse, where there are three Cyclops races. So we have, and we get all this from Margasket in everyone's favourite book, The Lost Hero. So Margasket calls herself a Hyborian Cyclops of the Northern Clan. And these were the lot that built the Titans' weapons in the Second Titan War. But she also mentions the other two, her southern cousins living on islands tending sheep. So these will be Polyphemus and others. And she also mentions the other cousins, the elder Cyclopses, who are a few thousand years older.
And apparently don't live anywhere. There's no location given for them.
No, it's just straight up, they're a few thousand years older. And then there's our older Cyclopses who are a few thousand years older. They think they're better than us. She is fully pulling a tantrum.
it's the younger sibling energy. It's the younger sibling energy.
So you get these different groups. So you get like the Margasket group who is more against humanity.
Yeah.
So then you get the likes of Tyson who is follows in the elder Cyclops footsteps by smithing, but is more like the southern Cyclopses in origins due to the fact that he's born of a god and a nymph. And also it seems that Rick invented the underwater forges. I spent about a couple hours just searching for Poseidon's underwater forges, and they don't seem to exist.
Yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense because, like, the Cyclopses in mythology seem to, other than obviously occasionally being born to Poseidon and a nymph, but even then, is that actually part of mythology? That's a good question. Is that?
Yeah, no, that was, okay, that is. Was a thing.
Okay, but other than that, I think, like, from most of mythology, the Cyclopses seem to be more tied to Zeus.
And Hephaestus. It does talk about that. The elder Cyclopses forge the stuff in Hephaestus's forges in Mount Etna.
We don't seem to see that much with Hephaestus in the Roydenverse. Like, he mentions, like, he sees Cyclopses as, like, noble creatures, but we don't actually ever see him doing, like, having any connection with Cyclopses. Like, there's nothing like that. I wonder if, and because Rick does do this a lot, especially for Poseidon, because obviously Poseidon sucks in mythology, but because he's like, oh no, this is the dad of our main character, he's got to be somewhat nice. I think he's just given him more things to kind of make him seem better. Because like in reality, like Tyson, when he goes to the underwater forges, if it was based on natural mythology, he probably would have gone to Hephaestus's forges in St. Helens or wherever it would end up being. But Rick's kind of like, oh no, I've got to do something to keep Tyson connected to Poseidon and make Poseidon look like a good dad. So let's just make these things a thing. Because it doesn't make much sense logically. Like how an underwater, like it's underwater. Like, I don't think it showed how it works, but that, no. I'm going somewhat off topic, but it's stupid. I think the underwater forge is stupid.
I like it. It's a cool concept. I can, if I start thinking about it too hard, I can pick plot holes. For example, how are you keeping the metal hot?
Mm-hmm.
That's the main one.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's where we end up with the Cyclopses. We shall now move on to Centaurs. Centaurs. There's two sets of centaurs, again, which is also shown in the Voidenverse. And these link up to it all. So you have their main origin myth, where this dude, Zion, was invited to dine on Olympus. Tried to get with Hera. You know how it is. Zeus was like, nah, mate. I'm going to test you. And made a cloud look like Hera. The cloud's name is Nephele, which we'll shout out to her. The dude went, I don't care if it's Zeus, I'm still going after Hera. Went after the fake Hera and was punished. But Nephele still got pregnant and gave birth to either the first centaur or all of the centaurs.
God, the poor woman, if it was all of them.
She's a cloud, she's just doing what the god, and then she has to give birth to centaurs. It's like, come on, guys.
Yeah, so the women really get the short end of the stick in mythology, but I guess that's accurate for most things. But damn, give them a break.
It was also the horns. What are they called? Centaurs. I don't know why I forgot the name. And there's also the horn centaurs. Once again, Zeus is involved, and this time he's going after Aphrodite. She eludes him, and he feels like he still needs to relieve some tension, so he relieves it over Cyprus. If you don't know what that means, good.
Don't look it up. For the love of God, do not Google that.
If you want, there's a little...
It's
in Wikipedia, if you just Google the Zeus Aphrodite horned origin thing, if you really want to know what I'm exactly talking about. But, it doesn't say exactly, but it does say it. Anyway.
Zeus.
This act over Cyprus led to the horn centaurs occurring.
Oh god.
So there you go. Cyprus got splattered and I never attempted to start this podcast being PG. And then I went in about, and then I got through a year without not being PG. And I've set the tone. So this is the tone we live with. However, sometimes it's rather hard, guys. Okay?
I'm not going to lie. There was a joke I was ready to make of the fact that it was the fact that he relieves tension and makes horned centaurs. What does horn sound like? A horn is because of horn dog Zeus.
And then there's also Chiron. I'm just gonna move on now. There's also just Chiron. He exists. He is a centaur, but he's not really. He calls the party ponies his cousins, and they very much are. He's not related biologically to them, unless you go up and down the gods. Sort of thing. And well, actually, he's not related at all, because it's a cloud nymph that created the existing ones. Because he's odd, he's different, we'll forget about him. They only really have one myth besides those two origins, and it very handily leans into the party ponies, where they get drunk at a wedding, try to steal a bride, and they also try to steal all the other female guests and the young boys.
For reasons unknown.
It is very much for reasons unknown. Even in the myth, it's for reasons unknown. Like, it's not quite understood why that happens, but it happens. Yay! Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, that's a fun myth.
Yeah, that's like the only myth they're in. So then going to the Roiderverse and you get the party ponies, it makes all the sense. At least they stay. They just get drunk and have fun. But at least they've stopped their stealing of human ways, you know, sort of thing.
That we know of.
Yes.
It's never actually stated.
It's never stated they don't steal mortals, but...
But we can hope. Because also, where are they getting all this memorabilia that they've got of, like, you know, the crazy straw hat drink and, you know... The different, like, the
Maybe they've stopped their stealing of human ways, but they haven't stopped their stealing ways, and they go raid gift shops.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Yes, you also you get Chiron, whatever. Move on. I don't care about him for this. and then the horn centaurs, the cypress ones. You do see those fighting against the Romans, which is. Like, there's not really a myth about the horned centaurs. I tried to find out whether they were with the gods, against the gods. They just kind of existed on Cyprus.
Yeah.
And that's about as far as I could tell them. So then, and then we do have the whole mortal influence about people, about things, which, you know, muddies the water. So then being against the Romans is not the longest of stretches.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're now going to take a quick break and be back after this. Music, because I don't have any messages. I'm not. Now, if you before you thought the other bits were a bit mind bending, welcome to the full on "we have no answers" section. And the other stuff was just kind of background to talk about this. And it's all about monsters. And whether, why they fight, do they fight? What's happening? What's going on? And Cyclops and Centaurs were a good pick for this, I feel. Because, as talked about, you get good ones, get bad ones. You can decide which ones are the good ones and the bad ones. But you get opposing ones within the same generic monster species. So it's just, well, what's going on here? And preface... All the theories that I have, and just generally, you get this mortal memory belief thing. It's very cyclical. The gods influence the mortals influence the gods. We all love it. If you have that with the gods, you can swing it, especially with as I did with biology of the monsters. That collective personality and collective memory of these monster species does affect them. So that's why you have, so with centaurs, for example, as you went through time, I just gave you the origin myths. Man, I feel like Podcast of Poseidon's probably done an episode on centaurs. If they haven't, they need to. Damien, get on it. I know you're listening. And how the perception of them has changed over time, because in the Middle Evils? In the Middle Evils?
Well, admittedly, the Middle Age was evil.
Measly Middle Ages. Yes, in the Middle Ages, centaurs were kind of a scary, bad thing that hated all humans. So, you know, that's changed a little bit from these relatively friendly, party-going, human-stealing people. So it changes. So then you get this range of monsters which are unfriendly and friendly. But then you get the things like the, I think it's a double-ended snake. I can't bother to read it. From Toatun. And this guy is the most annoying guy. He's just the most annoying guy. Because he's literally just on his way home from work. He's a participating member of society. It's very annoying. It's just annoying. He's just annoying. Any thoughts, fam?
I have a few, yeah. Yeah, I've just from the idea alone, just on like the whole influence from mortal belief and memory. It does just make a lot of sense, like just the logic behind it all. I think there's just so much about, like, obviously the gods themselves, like they literally move continents, not on a regular basis, but often enough that they themselves have had changing personalities, that the only logical follow-up is that the same thing happens for monsters. Like, oh god, who was it? There was a particular monster who was, well, even actually, no, there's the, oh god, what are they called? The monster eating chains, what are they called? They pop up everywhere and they're just like a
donuts.
Random...
Monster donuts?
Something like that, yeah. Well, they get donuts there at least, but like it's basically like a random pop-up fast food place that anywhere a monster is, or like a collection of monsters, that it just turns up and it's for monsters particularly, but like they're everywhere and like everyone seems to even recognize the brand. But like that is very much like a human consciousness sort of thing, because like there is an influence there of, oh my god, wait, the demonization of fast food chains as a monstrous thing of capitalism and also on our health is what led to monsters starting their own food chain. Because the monstrous collective image of fast food chains went into their own genetic makeup, boy! Yes! Oh my god.
That is how Through the Mist works when I'm not recording an episode.
The logic is there. The logic is sound.
The logic is sound. So beyond the fact that it's just collective human... while I'm talking, I'm also trying to find the name of this thing because it's going to annoy me until I do. Besides the whole God's memory influence stuff that is very Roydenverse specific, you can also throw in nature versus nurture here.
Yeah.
And do monsters attack because of instinct or because that's what they're taught to do? Because you get the schooling scene in Bottle.
I like, I've never heard that saying out loud. I've seen the abbreviation, but I've never actually heard someone say abbreviation out loud. I was like, oh yeah, it would actually be described as Bottle.
Monster donut shop,
that's it. Yeah, it's like a Dunkin' Donuts.
And my match, and I'd now just pictured the Monster Munch guy but with a donut.
Oh my god, though, yes.
is Monster Munch run by monsters?
Oh my god, wait. Oh, that, Rick, that would have been a brilliant sponsorship deal to bring into your book.
A bit too British, but you know.
Maybe, but they were in England. They were in England before the gods.
They had to, yeah. Anyway, yes, so.
Nature versus nurture.
Nature versus nurture. So, like, you get the scene, but also, apparently, demigod is a delicacy. Apparently demigod tastes very nice to monsters.
Yes.
So, you know, it might just be, but that yummy food. So they hunt it, you know, as we did once, before we invented the farm.
Which is, wait, are humans the monsters to farm animals?
Here's the question, though, because demigod is a delicacy, but do they eat mortals just because, or...
Because we do know that Cyclops, so obviously the ones that do eat, they're the ones who also eat just general people as well, sometimes it seems. But predominantly seemingly demigods, because most demigods fall into their trap. But
yeah.
Other monsters we've not heard or seen or attack humans.
What are the Canadians?
Oh, the bear twins, isn't it? The bear twins.
No, the giant dodgeball Canadians.
Oh, the cannibal.
We're very sea of monsters today.
I don't even remember what they were called.
Hold on. I can't remember either. But they're Canadians.
Cannibals in Sea of Monsters.
But they're also cannibals, which is not technically correct. It annoys me every time now, once I worked it out.
Oh, the Laestrogian Giants.
Yes, Canadians. Laestrogian Giants, Canadians.
Yeah. It does say they're cannibals, but they don't eat anyone, so they're not exactly cannibals.
But we never see them eat anyone.
Yeah, they don't say that they do.
Also, they're not cannibals because they don't eat their own kind.
Yeah, that's stupid. Come on, Rick, basic research.
It's a very human way of looking at life. yeah. Guys, think of the monsters, okay? Yeah, and then you get the Amphibia. It's a great show. You should all watch it. Amphizabania. double-ended snake is in a suit is going home to his wife. Like, he does, he clearly is a participating member of the business world. Take that with a pinch of salt as you will. Yes, that's right. A monster participates in the business world. Fine.
A monster involved with capitalism. No, Didn't start listening never. To podcasts. But yeah, basically any of our podcasts, I'm pretty sure every single one of us at some point have said F capitalism.
So that's, like, clearly he's doing quite a lot. And, like, Apollo, at one point in his description, I've got it down here, hang on. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, if you don't, they don't necessarily all want to kill you. They will only kill if provoked. Like 98% of the time when Percy kills a monster, it's because the monster wants to eat him. Or is Demigod just too delicious that all monsters want to eat it? Except this one guy who's with a god disguised as a mortal and Meg. But he's like, nah, I'm just going to go home to my wife.
Maybe it's more just in like that whole thing in the series of like, depending on who your godly parent is, it depends on how many monsters bother you. So maybe because Meg is the daughter of Demeter, which is in like the most high powerful goddess, it's kind of, she's kind of like lower on the scale.
She's one of the OGs.
She is one of the OGs, but she is one of the OGs that alongside Hestia is usually forgotten, which is sad because they're pretty cool. So maybe that's why, maybe it's just kind of like, eh, you know, I won't get out of bed for less than a Poseidon.
Yes, maybe it's just because we've been following we just mainly have focus of the seven most powerful demigods of a generation, that it doesn't really matter. They all just smell kind of delicious.
Yes.
Maybe that's it. Maybe with power, maybe that spell that one lady did that made all monsters can smell demigods, maybe it's a deliciousness scale. And maybe the only reason satyrs, satyrs aren't evil is because they're vegetarians.
Unless you're Grover and you're killing humans in a game as a deer.
Still vegetarian.
Still vegetarian. But I just, the moment that you just said maybe there's like a deliciousness scale, I was like, wait, does that mean like the most powerful demigods are like a Lush store? Like you don't even need to be anywhere near it and you can smell the Lush from like a mile away. Yeah,
you just walk in past and like, there's a Poseidon nearby.
Yeah, literally, basically like that.
That smells a bit like clams. Poseidon.
It's like that scene in Son of Neptune where they're like quite a distance away from monsters, but like one of the giants immediately can smell Percy, but can't smell the other two. Like he can't smell Frank and Hazel. He can only smell Percy.
Percy's a strong one, he is. He needs to take more baths. That's probably it. He can't get wet, so he just stinks.
Although I was surprised by that, because I'm like Hazel was a daughter of Pluto, but maybe just, I don't know. Oh, she was technically dead, so...
Yeah, also there's the hierarchy of the two different views. Maybe a Mars kid. So maybe, actually, Frank would probably be more comparable to a Poseidon.
Yeah.
Because a Mars would be more comparable to a Poseidon. I said Poseidon twice.
Oh, wait, hold on. Because Frank is a descendant from someone who is a demigod Poseidon. So he is technically connected to Poseidon in some way. So technically, maybe Frank sent as a descendant.
Yeah, but that's too far gone.
Maybe more it's like it just adds to the extra Poseidon smell of Percy. And that's why Hazel wasn't noticed.
There's a tiny extra amount of Poseidon compared to the other two.
Yeah, so you get a bit more of that, and so the other two fade into the background. But maybe it's just like a scale of just like who is smelt first, or yeah, basically a Lush store. Like you can smell the Lush store further away, and that's due to the power of
you. Like the strength. There's a of Lush nearby, project. Guys. I don't want to go near. I'm going to sneeze. I don't really kind of know how to talk about this, but it's kind of where we are. It is just, it's an odd one. It's an oddball, guys. We're just a bit oddballing. It's odd. I think in the end, it's a bit of a combination of all everything we've just talked about.
Yeah.
Where it's a bit of mortal conscious collective memory influencing whether they're all nice to humans or bad against whether they are for demigods or against demigods, good or evil, you can pick your side. And so you get those differences in the Cyclopses, where, like, I mean, there's other media where Cyclopses are evil. So human consciousness would go, well, Cyclopses are evil. But there's also the old stories where Cyclopses were good. And the old stories do hold a lot of weight when we're talking about this sort of stuff, because it is what these guys are based off. So their old stories are like the root, and they cling to them, but they can emanate a little away from those. So they could become bad, but they still came from this other thing. So you get the evil Cyclops, you get the evil centaurs, you get the good Cyclops, you get the good centaurs. And then also, just generally, how are these guys brought up? Are they taken to Poseidon's underwater forges that may or may not have existed in mythology, probably didn't, but are cool to think about? Or are they thrown on the street and left there to fend for themselves and become resentful of everyone and end up, or are they brought up by an evil mother who just likes to eat demigods? It's all this, all those questions and more on, this is the end of the episode, so, you know, on nothing. You got any more closing comments? Because I think that's me wrapping everything up.
I think that's all for me as well. I just think it's interesting. Sometimes I think it may be like just thinking of Tyson, for example, like he grew up in like basically the worst possible situation. Like you said, like he literally grew up in the street being tortured relentlessly by a monster that bigger than him, that followed him everywhere to torture him. And yet he still grew up to be one of the kindest Cyclopses that like anyone knew, turned out to be this really lovable, really kind person. Cyclops. And I wonder if sometimes it's like that whole thing. Monsters are people too.
That feels like something at least one demigod has done a campaign on, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that'll be me.
I don't know what cabin that would be, but there's someone.
Oh, who?
Maybe Hephaestus thing.
It could be Hephaestus because they are four Cyclopses. But I was also thinking maybe. There is a goddess somewhere who is about balance. What is her name?
It's the judge.
Yeah.
She holds the lyre. I can't remember.
She holds the balance scales. I can't remember.
If
her
you
name
guys anymore. Don't know what we're talking about, come on, guys. She's in like every piece of media ever. At least a depiction of her.
And in every lawyer TV show as well, there is an image of that statue. And she is a goddess. But she, like, any child of her, I think we'd also be the people to start up something for, like, monsters of people too.
That would be a cool child to see. But yes. You never listen to the pod. Get on it. Add it to the next book. Do it.
Yeah, do it. Or just add it to the show. Just, like, give more minor god characters, like, a few speaking roles. Even if they're not important, just have them be there. Just make
just have them be named in the cast list.
Exactly.
Have me be one.
Yes, bring on the podcasters. Bring on the podcasters to the show. Let us be the confused British demigods.
This is pointless because he definitely doesn't listen to this. But you know, yeah. Whatever.
If the listeners go and tell them, that'll be great. What was I going to say? But yeah, but so sometimes even if the nurture sort of situation was that, and even if both nature and nurture were both negatives, sometimes people can just end up as good people, even if they've had terrible experiences. Like by nature, Tyson is a monster, but by nurture, he grew up abused and unhappy and unloved, and yet he still was one of the most lovable people. So sometimes it's just the product of a person's character in general that can lead to them deciding to not fall into their nature, which I think Tyson is that example.
Yes, this is a great discussion for any philosophy class you have, if you want to bring it up. I feel like it's a great way to talk about this sort of stuff without linking it to real people.
Exactly.
But you can talk about it. You can talk about it theoretically and theoretically at the same time. I think that's everything then. Before I run the outro, anything, plug, replug everything now.
All right. So if you want to pre-order my short story, which is the setup for the novel of my series, the Into the Wild series, you can do so on most platforms. The link will be in Owen's description box. It is entitled Echoes of the Past. If you also want to go through another Percy Jackson podcast that is going through the series in timeline order, you can check out my podcast, The Best Damn Camp.
Yes, she actually looks at the books rather than just talks about generic things.
You can follow the social media for that is at Best Damn Camp Pod. I also have a YouTube channel where I do Percy Jackson theories via videos and stuff like that. And I do a Wildenverse news as well, which just wraps up the news of the week. And that is A Healthy Dose of Fran on YouTube. Please subscribe. I would like that, please. And that's basically, I think, all I have.
She's a proper content creator, this one, guys. Go support her.
Yes, please. Right then.
Music and outro. So thank you for indulging this theory. If you have any comments on this theory or theories of your own that you want me to discuss, you can email them through to through.team.mist@gmail.com or you can follow the Instagrams @through_mist and DM me over there. Make sure to follow the podcast, like the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, whatever you have to do on whatever platform you listen to make the podcast known, like just share it. Do it. I've been Owen.
And I've been Brian.
And come back next time as we try to see through the mist. That is how we do it here.
Nice.